Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz podcast. Just a quick note, this is part two of a two-part episode with Sonny Vaccaro. In part one, we discussed his career, and in part two, we're going to be discussing his recent advocacy for college athletes. So if you're interested in hearing about his career, go back and find part one on the Sports Law Biz blog or on iTunes. And part two is going to be really interesting too, so stick around. Thanks. Welcome to the Sports Law Biz podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in?
Okay, so, you know, you have this experience with Adidas, you have this experience with Reebok, and then, you know, you quit, and what do you do from there?
Reebok was very good to me. Paul Fireman paid me more money than I got from any other company, ironically, at the end of my career in, you know, shoe business. But in 2007, I was mad at age limit. I was mad at watching those films of the kids, because I really wasn't into, contrary to what people think, the EA Sports part of this. I was really into seeing the kids being shown on the films, classic sports. I knew Steve Greenberg pretty well, and I know when they originated that in 1997. So for a long period of time, the athlete was always getting the short end of the stick. And then the age limit, even though you're going to say the NCAA has nothing to do with it, they're a co-conspirator with the professional leagues to do these things. And I had a gripe, and I had a bitch about that. And I said, if I'm going to do anything before, you know, I'm called off this earth in the physical sense, I'm going to stand up and fight. And that's where you're taking me now. To 2007, we walked away from an unbelievable job, and Fireman treated us good financially, to a world that was just interesting. I mean, it was interesting to me. We were invited, as we were from your school, the University of Virginia, I think it was the last place I spoke, to this world of, like, a culture that had no idea the other side of the mind of what the athlete was about. And I only elected to speak to law schools, business schools, and journalist schools. I did not speak to a basketball nor a football team. And I did this because I believe to this minute that the people who run the NCAA have lost their path 100 years ago, meaning when they started. I think the NCAA has existed solely for the entertainment of themselves and the American public, with an afterthought of who got them there. The very beginning of the NCAA was almost canceled in football, and it was almost because football was the birth of the NCAA. No one's talking about the basketball teams in the 1900s. They're talking about the football teams. They're talking about Chicago University leaving. They're talking about guys coming back from the war and going, you know, to work and then going to play school. That happened at, you know, University of Pittsburgh. All those schools. So just for argument's sake, the athlete has been the preeminent vehicle for the wealth of the universities. They concocted a phrase in 1971 by, you know, Walter Byers, their first important commissioner or president of the NCAA, saying student-athlete, when in fact it was probably the most inappropriate word ever given to any individual, because one had nothing to do with the other than it was a name given to it. It wasn't a name, your Irish, you know, that's your given, you know, name, your nationality, you're this, you're that. There was a reason for it. They didn't become student athletes until a certain year. So were all the people before them, what were they, renegades, thugs? I don't know, what were they? We had, in basketball, we had gambling scandals. Do anybody remember that in the 50s? We had death. In fact, the Chicago, you know, and the president of the United States actually said we might cancel football because it's too hard. This is what they've done. Byers was smart enough, and the remaining presidents of the NCAA have been smart enough, as the money got bigger, to squeeze the athlete to a point where the general public, when you give somebody information, and you give it to them, and you give it to them, and you give it to them, they accept it if they're too lazy to understand what they've been given. And I found that to be true since I was in the middle of the corporate entity that started this, the apparel business, the shoe business. They begat the Gatorades of the world, and everything begat until we formed companies that did nothing but handle the events and the marketing of the universities. They weren't done the way your mother and father or your uncles and aunts went to school, my generation of people, where you went to a school and you had somebody that did this, and you sold tickets, and maybe you got a car dealership to give a car to a coach. That's why the phrase, and that's why I left. And talking to people like yourself, and there have been a few of them, thousands actually, and I started to resonate. Not that they all believed in what my beliefs are. I had many questions. I'll never forget the first one that I went to, I think were Harvard, Yale, Duke Law, and Wharton Business. I think that was my first journey. Well, go through the annals of the American educational system. Those are four pretty dang good schools to base what you hope an educated person is going to get, because they should lend to the benefit of all mankind. And it really had nothing to do with sports, other than Duke basketball. The other three, Wharton doesn't have anything. But my point was, this was a move that I made, that my wife made. We conscientiously gave up being employed. So all these years, I've never worked or taken a dime, and you can attest to that, to anybody for making speeches at their schools. I mean, and I refused to do that. I always hoped that someday one of the students, whether they were a journalist, a lawyer, or a business person, would have the insight into this subject and carry it on. I never believed we'd ever get lawyers and evolve into O'Bannon. I might have gone off path for you, Peter, so you can bring me back if you want, but I sort of gave you a little history there for your audience.
Right, yeah. So you're going around now in this part of your life. Like you say, you're not employed. You're not getting money for these appearances that you do speaking to students. And you're sharing your views on what's wrong with the collegiate system right now. So what do you think is wrong with the collegiate system?
Well, they've got to treat the players with equity, and they've got to share in the profits. And in my belief, this was never about pay for play. That's another one of those phrases the other side uses. No one's going to get paid when the game's over. But when your class graduates, and let's use Johnny Manziel or Jimmy Tebow, because I think they were the two, and none of them are going to make it to pro, so we can stay under college and things. Well, when you're those kind of people, and you're generating profits for the individuals that are the NCAA, because that's what you're doing. You're generating for them, okay? And you can tell me all about the scholarship and all that stuff. I don't even want to go into that with me on your radio show. But my idea was and is that the athletes should share in the revenue when their thing is, and they don't own you forever. The whole thing about perpetuity is, like, ridiculous. It's worse than slavery by using that name, and it is their name. They put that word in there. I didn't. You didn't. The athlete. The athlete is a short-term individual at these schools. And what we've discovered, even since I got involved in the courts in 2009 with O'Bannon, we've now seen other things happening, as the concussions, and more important, no, nothing more important than the health of the individual, but the academics. What I marveled at and witnessed, because I never would have, I always knew that it was fraudulent, but it goes back to my term, student athlete. Well, if you're honest about this in any way, shape, or form, and I'll get back to the money, and you really think that these athletes are getting an education, and I do not want to hear about some of the schools, and I'm sure some of the schools do a great job of educating their athletes. I'm not demonizing everyone, but this world isn't about everyone. It's about athletes at particular places where the money being generated at these particular schools because of the ability of the athlete and not because of the ability of their academics. The whole thing falls apart. But the academic fraud, you know, that's been perpetrated, even I imagine people at the University of Miami are listening to this. I think the things happened at Miami that happened on this this latest case here. And Miami's broken the rules a few times in their existence. There's no question about that. You can just document it. But what the NCAA did to the University of Miami over the last scandal with the guy Shapiro and the players and all that stuff, and all across the board, and they took his money, you know, and all that stuff, that they would actually do what they did to undermine the relevance of the case, the importance of the case, and really to have a bias and a prejudice against getting Miami or getting these athletes. This has happened, and I've witnessed it, but never was one so egregious as this that I can talk about it. I can tell you I've watched schools and coaches persecuted and prosecuted. No, some of them not prosecuted, just persecuted, that have carried on through their lives and after death. The organization, they do things that hurt athletes. They hurt athletics. They hurt the image of the school by their own dastardly deals. You cannot excuse what they did at the University of Miami, and you certainly can't excuse what they did in the most horrific thing that ever happened on a campus, which would happen with Jerry Sandusky in Penn State. But for Mark Emmert and the NCAA presidents and all the people who supposedly gave him the authority to go in there under the threat of making that the death penalty, and they're not going to play, and making them acquiesce, and including the athletes who played on the team, and stripped them naked of all the things they accomplished by their own words, the universities, good athletes, good students, graduate, who had nothing to do with the dastardly deals. If anyone other than Sandusky had something to do with it, it certainly wasn't the players on the sports teams at Penn State. For him to stand up there and make that declaration like he's carrying the message, then I hold him all guilty. For that egregious thing alone, Emmert should have been fired, and the people who recommended that he should impose that penalty should be fired. Because what did it do? It took in the fact that they gave a damn about the athletes. But they gave a bigger damn about letting Penn State continue with their athletes by not giving them the death penalty. If you give us these kids from 2000 whatever to 2000 whatever, we'll punish them. They had nothing to do with it. So the future, football can go on. Basketball can go on. That's why I can't stand the NCAA. It goes back to buyers, and it goes back to getting paid $2 million to be the president of the NCAA. I have no idea what the hell their job is. I've called them out on that. Now, that's not a logical statement to make, right? Because you pay anything you want. But I don't know what their job is, because they have no power to do anything. But I can't stand what they've done to schools. Now, are there penalties? I don't know what's going to happen at North Carolina, because the NCAA just told us that they really don't understand, or they don't get involved in the academic part of it, when their creed is academics and athletics. How they can absolve North Carolina's coaching staff from all these classes these kids took during those particular years and not fire anybody is beyond my comprehension. How they can say that, you know, that everyone knew these classes were happening, but, you know, well, kids went in there. There's not a major college football or basketball coach in the world that ever lived that doesn't know where every one of his athletes are. And if they don't, they should be fired for not knowing. They invited them to their campus to work for their football team, to get them wins so the school makes money, so the alumni donate, so coaches make more money, and then they leave after they make more money. It's interesting to me. So we've got bigger buildings, bigger training rooms. We're doing it all for these kids that they're now going to blast and blow off the face of the earth. The education thing is sickening. The Penn State thing was pathetic. And what they did at the University of Miami by making a deal. Oh, my God. They're dealing with the devil. Interesting. Your turn. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, yeah. No, so, I mean, it sounds like you've brought up a couple different things. You brought up one issue with the NCAA is the failure to compensate players on the field for what they contribute when other people are benefiting, right?
Yes.
And then with the Penn State issue, that's almost a legal idea that you're punishing the wrong people. You take away the opportunity to play to get scholarships for students when it wasn't those students that committed the terrible things that happened at Penn State.
Right.
Right?
Yes, sir.
And you know, and that would be unfair in a criminal justice system, and you're saying it's unfair here, and I think that's probably a safe thing to say.
It's very safe, and I'll stick to it till I die. It's my opinion. I'm not a liar, but I don't know how they do that. They made a deal for my life. That's what they did. They made a deal that I played in one of those teams, and they said, you didn't play. Well, tell that to the kid Telefair that was paralyzed at Penn State. Tell him he didn't play in that game. You think he's going to be okay tomorrow morning? They're sickening. That's sickening. I mean, go ahead. You can stay in this. Penn State is pathetic. I mean, what they do to those kids is pathetic.
Yeah, and again, it's a question of who is this really benefiting. With the Miami example, you know, making a deal with Shapiro to punish the students again, you know, is that helping the student athletes or the athletes? It wouldn't seem to be so.
No, and let me take it back. You refresh my mind, and your audience may not even know it. A long time ago at Baylor, there was a coach there. There was the basketball coach that was doing, you know, going to make them win and help them win. And a kid shot a kid, murdered. There was a murder on campus. I happen to know the kids. They went to my camp. And, you know, the coach, and he was an esteemed coach. He was a protege, and I don't want to slip with his name here, but, you know, of a Hall of Fame, great coach, all that BS, right? And he told all his teammates, to say he was a drug dealer. He was trying to demean the kid that got murdered. So they didn't, you know, so we'll just say he was a drug dealer if he deserved to be murdered or some damn thing. These are the things. How do you cover this up? This is college athletics. And the coach, just so you know, the coach wanted it that way so he can keep coaching and make money and win games, and the school would have been fined. And it just goes on and on, Peter, on and on. But the Miami thing, they made a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
And they made the deal. They initiated the deal.
Yeah.
And you want us to think that they want to do best for the athletes. Go ahead, young fella.
Okay, well, let's move on to talk specifically about the O'Bannon lawsuit. That's something you've been involved with. Can you explain the O'Bannon lawsuit a little bit?
Well, I knew Eddie O'Bannon, and he played in my All-Star game, the Dapper Dan. He went to my camps, the ABC. I knew his family. I knew his brother Charles. Knew mom and dad very well. I hadn't seen him for a lot of years, and we were out looking for people. And I had mentioned to Eddie, I saw him in a tournament we were running in a basketball tournament in Las Vegas in the summertime of like 2006 or 7 or something. And so, you know, I was angry about Brandon Jennings at that time. And so Hosfield wasn't even on the thing. So when Hosfield, he's the lawyer that represented Eddie eventually, was interested in what I was doing, I was introduced to him by Rob Ades. That name, he's this big lawyer. He knew a man named Kenneth Feinberg, who's probably one of the most respected men in America. He's the man that divides the money up in every tragedy America's had, from Agent Orange to 9/11 and to, you know, BP oil. I didn't know Kenneth Feinberg, but Rob knew him. And he said, I have a friend here who's fighting this case against the NCAA. You know any antitrust lawyers? Kenneth Feinberg called me up while I was on the campus of the University of North Carolina one day and asked me questions. He said, you'll be getting a call from somebody, you know. So he introduced me to Michael Hosfield. I got a call, Michael Hosfield, talking why I believed in this. I did. I'm in North Carolina, speaking a seminar, right? And here going. And so Michael, I get a call from his office about 2 weeks later, saying they'd like to come to fly. They had offices in San Francisco. They flew down to meet me. Pam and I were living in the Marina Del Rey area, Calabasas area in California at that time. We met him at a hotel in Marina Del Rey. For 8 hours, I went on and on and on and on about all the things that I thought were wrong, and I thought these Emmy things were wrong. There were you have to understand, there are no plaintiffs now. I'm telling him a theory. I just told you who Kenneth Feinberg was. Well, Michael Hosfield, it's two of the most famous cases Michael did. He represented the Holocaust victims against Nazi Germany, and he represented in South Africa the people there, and they sued the American companies who were doing business, you know, during apartheid. I mean, so this guy's background is pretty solid. He's a, you know, successful, wealthy, good he's had cases where of human interest, of importance. I mean, you can't get any deeper than a Holocaust situation. And, you know, so you go there, and then you go into apartheid. And you say, damn, now this guy's interested in what I'm preaching. Now, this is amazing. And, again, I tell them. They send two lawyers with me. I don't hear from them again. Pam and I are now in we're in Athens. Brandon Jennings was successful going to Europe on the age limit. I was in Greece meeting the owners of the teams in Greece, the professional teams. A couple other high school kids wanted to go pro, but they didn't want to go. They didn't want to go to American colleges, you know. And then Brandon got away. You know, Brandon then he came back and signed it. Multi-million-dollar deal with Under Armour and all that sort of stuff. So that was out of the way. But the court case was different. It had nothing to do with Asia. But I was in Athens because of that, to speak to the owners of those teams. And Hausfeld called me in Greece. And he asked me if I would come to Washington. Well, shit, I was, you know. when do you want me to come? Can you come, like, tomorrow? I said, well, we're in Greece. So, anyway, we arranged. I did, in Pam. Bought our own tickets from Athens to Paris to Washington, D.C. And 2 days later, we walked in on Michael Hausfeld in these buildings in, I guess, L Street or somewhere in Washington. And I met Michael Hausfeld for the first time. And that gave birth to a case that didn't have a plaintiff yet, the O'Bannon case.
And the crux of that case is the idea of compensating players for the use of their likeness, whether that's the school putting up pictures of past players or whether that's a company like EA Sports, you know, including Ed O'Bannon or Michael Jordan or whoever in a video game. So taking college players, putting them in a video game, and then having the video game company make money without the student athlete or the athlete making money.
Well, here again was this university splitting the money with this other company, you know, the people making the product, and the athlete's the one's pictures on there. He's in the film. You know, he's Johnny Manziel. He signed the article, whatever the hell number he is. I mean, that's my point. So that's where everyone gets different, is pay for play. It had nothing to do with paying for play. The original suit has nothing to do with that. That's Jeffrey Kessler's suit. That's what the Jenkins case is going to be. O'Bannon was the antitrust. They don't own you. It's so cut and dry in reality, Peter. How can they audit it? Think they own you? You signed a scholarship paper that specifically says in there, we own you for perpetuity. They knew what they were doing. They were the educated people. They cheated these athletes from day one. Day one. They wanted to sell it. They think if they played for you, that they own you. Really? What's that have to do with your scholarship? They own me? They own me? I mean, I don't want to get into, you know, what people, and it gets touchy, but how do they own me? That's what O'Bannon is about. That's why I can't understand why the appeal took so long, because we've won on every phase of the court all the way. 5 years! 5 years! Judge Wilkins wrote a ruling. We won. Now they're in appeals court. It's been there for months. No one understands why. The logic of it is it's illogical for to think that the athlete can't be compensated for his likeness and image. It's impossible to realize that. You can't. It's impossible. They don't own you. So that's what O'Bannon is. O'Bannon
okay.
Is the other cases. O'Bannon is likeness and image and the antitrust. These people don't own you. They can't sell you. You can't sell yourself because they have access to the teams. You know, your turn. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, there's other cases. There's Kessler's case and other ones that are pending. But, yeah, just to be clear, O'Bannon is dealing with the likeness of former athletes in college. And, you know, you got a great lawyer in Michael Hausfeld. And you've won at the lower court levels. It's on appeal right now. That's part of why I wanted to do this podcast right now is that decision should be coming out any day. I mean, it has taken a long time, and we're waiting to hear back about it. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
Yes.
Okay, so just going on, you've shared your feelings about college sports. And again, I think it's really interesting because you're connected to college sports in a lot of ways, having had these camps and gotten to know the coaches in the 30 for 30. There's a lot of college coaches that speak there about their relationships with you. And what was interesting to me in watching it is how these coaches, they say, oh, you know, I like Sonny. He's a great guy. But I disagree with him on compensating athletes. He's just wrong about that. You know, there's John Thompson says that, Jim Boeheim, and others. And I'm just curious, what do you think about that?
That was their opinion. They deserve it. And also, they work for their employers are the people we're suing, just so we understand that. The coaches work for the NCAA and the universities. If the coaches ever come out before we get a read all here, now I can say only from what I totally believe, and I've had conversations with people. I respect what those guys said. Everyone's, by not saying anything, they agree, they think that. Could you go against your employer on something that they're fighting for their life on? Because that's what their employer is telling these coaches. So I understand why they said it. I'd like to see them tell me that they're not going to pay them if we win in court. I want them all to quit. If they think, well, those guys have all retired. But see, that's going to be Sonny Vaccaro's question to you, Peter, and the rest of bright young people. Now ask all these coaches, the great coaches, I want them to tell the athletes, we're not going to pay you. We're not going to let you earn money off your likenesses. We're not going to let you earn money off whatever it is they legally can earn money off of. They did it because their hands were tied. Okay?
Yeah.
They couldn't go against their employer or ex-employers. That's how they made their money. Johnston coaches Georgetown. Jimmy Calhoun, is bigger than anything. Larry Brown, I mean, Larry was the most funniest one to me. It wasn't the other three guys. It was, like, funny because, like, he basically said last year when the Moutier kid went to China that basically it was a financial thing. I mean,
yeah.
I remember that. I mean, but he forgot what he said.
Yeah, no, there's a whole lot of factors going into there, and that's a pretty nuanced appreciation of that. So thanks for sharing that. Okay, so now just wrapping up, you know, there has been some recent changes in the NCAA, some schools in the Power Five conferences giving out cost of attendance scholarships. There's Oliver Luck, the NCAA's new executive vice president for regulatory affairs. What do you think about those kind of recent developments in the NCAA?
I think the recent development, all because of the O'Bannon case and Ramogi doing things with the union, threatening and all that. They did those things. It's funny that they did them right after O'Bannon's gone to court. Just check all the new things. A lot of these issues have been on the table since 1991, 1971. That's when they took away the four-year scholarship. 71, you're 29, 44 years ago. They finally are giving it back because we, gripe so much about it. So some conferences are doing it now. Cost of attendance is now here. I mean, those are things. The Ramogi's group, the union thing. Although, in the union fight, your audience should understand, they just didn't have the guts to rule on it. They did not say that the athletes were not employees. They never said that. They never said they are not employees. They said that Northwestern couldn't do it because there are ramifications to unionship with the private school. Because it was one school. They were suing basically Northwestern. That's what it was. And they deferred on it. They even deferred, insinuating that the courts will decide this. But they never said that the athlete was not an employee, just so for the record there.
Yeah, no, courts and the labor board have a tendency to do that, kind of put things off for other people to deal with.
Right.
So, okay. Well, thanks for sharing your time with us. I guess just to wrap it up, we've discussed your career. We've discussed this advocacy that you're doing right now with college athletes. How do you want to be remembered as you move forward in your life?
Well, I don't know. I don't think about it, Peter. I think what's most important to me at this point in time in my life are the people that I've known and the kids that I've met, people like yourself, the schools. I love these speeches. I think that's been the 37 schools, I think, Pam, that we've spoken at since 2007. I think those were the happiest days for me because I met people who had an opinion of me and never met me. That's very important. And then I try to explain that. You should never have an opinion of anyone that's formed by somebody else's opinion of you. That's stupid. But I don't know. You know, there's all kinds of things. You know, when I'm dead, I'll not know what the hell you think of me anyway. I'd like to know what you think of what I'm doing. If you think I'm right in the fight for these fights, you fight for the rights of an athlete to have a life. You know, there's, you know, whatever. But I, you know, watching, you know, being proud of my family and, you know, and being married to Pam, and the ability that I've had to go meet, you know, this whole new generation, I've watched it all turn. I'm the only person at this level who can say they knew that I was in office for every NCAA president since 1960. That was Walter Byers. I mean, I've been doing business, you know, and they've been berating me. I'm still here, and they've had 10 presidents since then.
That's a great thing to leave us with. I'd just like to thank you again for taking the time to talk about this. I think it'll be interesting and informative for a lot of people. And yeah, you're a great friend, a great mentor to me. So I'm glad that we were able to do this.
Well, that to me is, well, hopefully my life is. Thank you very much for those words, and please tell your wife hello. And anyone else you want to put in contact, you know, you don't have to call and ask me. If it's something to do with this, I'll be glad to do it.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks a lot, Sonny.
All right. God bless. Bye, dear.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIB Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, @PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, @SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.